Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Wake Up to Purpose with your host, John Stanko. This program will help you find your purpose and, more importantly, how to make your purpose work for you. And now, here's John Stanko.
Hello out there in internet land. This is John Stanko, your host, for another edition, another episode of Wake Up to Purpose, and it's going to be another good one. I have a pastoral tandem from Toronto, Canada, Philip and Lisa Wins, and we met Philip and Lisa last September for the first time when we were at a Derek Prince meeting in down in South Carolina, and it's really been a long time since my wife and I connected with somebody the way we did with them. We just enjoyed getting to know them then. They came down to Pittsburgh last November, and they're hockey fans, or as they say, north of the border, and in Chicago and other hockey fans. And but not just any hockey fans. They're Pittsburgh Penguin hockey fans. And so we got to take in a game with our friends, Dick and Cindy Leggett. And I was supposed to be up in Toronto first weekend of May, but to be with them. But, of course, that didn't happen. So we want to hear from them today, just what's happening up north of the border. How did pandemic impact life and worship and routines up there? And so that's what we're going to do, and we'll just see where the interview goes. Now, I've got them on two separate lines because when we're not face-to-face, it's very easy for us to step on one another while somebody was taking a breath and we think they're done. So, and we interject or what have you. So we're just going to hear from them separately, but we may bring them on together, which is possible to do. And, with blog radio, excuse me, people can even, could even call in. I don't do a lot of that unless I've prepared those who are being interviewed in the past, not on this Wake Up to Purpose, but when I did blog radio a few years ago, you had some crazy people every now and then, which isn't, again, too hard to control. But, I'd rather hear from, from the guests that I have. I have chosen them for a reason, and because they're people of purpose, or they're doing creative things, or with this week, we've been talking about current events a great deal. And speaking of that, trust you are, as I said in Facebook Live, doing well, but not too well, because this is an unsettling time, a time for all of us to be searching our hearts. I have been doing an assessment and evaluation, going through the inventory of my habits and my attitudes and my behaviors, and was praying the other night, and I just felt the Lord say, "Stay the course." And I've shared some on Facebook Live my own journey of becoming more aware. I'm not saying aware or totally aware, but more aware of the plight of African Americans in our nation, and I tried to adopt a philosophy of that I thought was biblical, and it was pursuing reconciliation. And so I want to continue to do for the rest of my days, I applaud the protests, the cries and demands for change, but I think we have sown the wind and we're reaping a whirlwind in having so disassociated ourselves as a culture from any absolutes of right and wrong. And so anyway, that's not why you're tuning in. We want to move on and hear from the winds. But I just think my concern is for the church and for how we tend to chase after causes, that we don't initiate them too often. We react to them or we respond to them, and I think that's not necessarily bad in that, but I think we should be the leaders in the issue of diversity and inclusion, and unfortunately, we are not. So next Tuesday, I'm going to have Dr. Rhonda Johnson back on the show. It'll be her third show, and African-American doctor here in Pittsburgh. She went to Kenya with me in February, so this will be, as I said, her third show. So I wrote her this morning. I said, would you interview me? And she kind of laughed and sent me an LOL and said, you really want me to do that? I said, I do. I don't want the questions. You can ask me anything. And I guess I just don't want to control the agenda of the show. And she's a great interview, and she's cooperative. And so that's not the issue. I want somebody to ask me questions that will cause me to articulate what it is that I'm feeling and sensing or show where I need some more clarity. And so she agreed to do it. And again, I do not want any advance notice. I don't want to be Googling answers to prepare for my interview. I told her she could ask me about race, my journey, about what we did in Kenya. Because I learned a lot this year in our trip, and we're not going to go take a trip next year, but we will in 2 years. And Dr. Rhonda helped me see some things that we were not doing. Certainly one of them was medical care for the orphans. Anyway, so that'll be Tuesday. So I want somebody to be asking me some challenging questions. You know, we for 7 weeks we're reading Psalm 91. We've moved on the last couple of weeks. Let me read Psalm 99 before I bring Phil and Lisa on. We're just progressing on. We made a right turn at Psalm 91, and today we're at Psalm 99, which says, "The Lord reigns, let the nations tremble. He sits enthroned between the cherubim, let the earth shake. Great is the Lord in Zion. He is exalted over all the nations. Let them praise your great and awesome name. He is holy. The king is mighty. He loves justice. You have established equity. In Jacob you have done what is just and right. Exalt the Lord our God and worship at his footstool. He is holy. Moses and Aaron were among his priests. Samuel was among those who called on his name. They called on the Lord and he answered them. He spoke to them from the pillar of cloud. They kept his statutes and the decrees he gave them. Lord our God, you answered them. You were to Israel a forgiving God, though you punished their misdeeds. Exalt the Lord our God and worship at his holy mountain, for the Lord our God is holy." As you can see in the structure of the psalm, he is holy, the Lord our God is holy, is sort of the end of each of the stanzas. But without further ado, let me bring half of our tandem on to have her talk to you. This is Lisa Wins. Lisa, welcome to Wake Up to Purpose.
Thank you, John. I'm excited to be here.
Well, I'm very honored to have you here, and we've become big fans of yours and what you're doing up north, and we're looking forward to coming to see it firsthand, but we'll just have to do that at another time. So tell us, our listeners, a little bit about you, Lisa, your background, and then we'll go from there.
Yeah, I was born and raised in the United States. I came from a really small community outside of South Bend, Indiana. So I am a huge Notre Dame football fan amongst other U.S. sports, mm-hmm. but do love my college athletics. Both my mother and father were pastors, so I grew up as a pastor's kid. And they worked a small church, and I grew up in a godly home, which I am very grateful for. At the age of 18, I applied to a theological school in Scotland, in which when I went on for my interview, he suggested that I go to a school in India. And when I asked him why he suggested that, is because at the time I felt like I was called to be a missionary. And he had suggested, well, the best way to find out if you want to be a missionary is go live on the mission field. And that was probably one of the best advice that anybody could have given me. So at 18, I moved to Mumbai, India, and went to Bible school there, fell in love with people, fell in love with the food. And after that, shortly after that, I met my husband, Philip, while speaking in Toronto, Canada. And we actually, my husband, who is Canadian, moved to the States with myself, and we pastored there for 10 years and then moved here to the Toronto area. So that's a little bit about what I've come from. We're blessed to have four beautiful daughters. Our oldest is Lydia, and she's 16, and we go all the way down to from 16 to a six-year-old. So we have a span of two teenagers and two very little ones, which keeps us on our toes. So we can talk about teenage stuff, and then we can talk about Paw Patrol and Disney Plus.
Yes, yes, we were just watching Masha and the Bear here at with my grandchildren. So yeah, and Peppa Pig, and so all the heavyweights of children's television. Tell us a little bit about where you're pastoring now, the name of the church, and just tell us a little bit about the church.
Sure. So the name of the church is called Alive Church, and our home campus is right outside of Toronto, like you had mentioned. We're in Newmarket, Ontario, which is a suburb of Toronto. We love the city of Toronto itself. It's one of the most multicultural and diverse cities in the entire world. And Newmarket is just a reflection of that. So we're really blessed to pastor. We pastor a smaller church, but it is very multicultural. We have something like, the last time we counted, 14 different nations represented in our congregation, which in itself was a little bit of a hyper jump from pastoring in the South Bend, Indiana area, where we predominantly had a Caucasian, but a little bit of a sprinkling of a mix, to now being honored to pastor a congregation that is much more multicultural. And then in 2017, we planted out a church north of Toronto. And so we look after two locations at this point.
Yeah. And what are your duties in the church? I mean, I know you're a pastor and you'll do anything you're called upon to do, but what's your emphasis, or what ministries do you oversee, or what ministries have you initiated?
Yeah. So as far as the church is concerned, yeah, Philip and I kind of walk out life together. So a lot of the lines become blurred between Philip's responsibilities and mine, but the bigger piece that I would probably take over would be the administration of the campuses. And so I would oversee the staff, help at least oversee the staff and the administration of the church.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Very good. All right. Let me put you on hold. Don't go anywhere. I'm going to bring your other half on. And as it spins here, there's Pastor Phil. Welcome to Wake Up to Purpose.
Thank you, John. Thank you so much for having us. What an honor to be here.
Yeah, it's very special. I guess it's the next best thing to being there, because we were going to be together, but. It'll have to wait. Tell us a little bit, our listeners, a little bit about you, your background.
Yeah, I'm really blessed because I was raised in a godly home. My dad pastored the church that we're currently pastoring before us. And then, his brothers, a lot of those people are pastors. And so it's kind of in our heritage. So that's a real blessing to us. So, yeah. What else would you like to know?
Did you ever think that you would be pastoring your dad's church?
That's a great question. When I was young, I thought there was a chance that I would. And then, how you go through seasons of life and you're just kind of trying to hear God. And God did speak to me about going to the United States at one point in time. And then, of course, lo and behold, I meet Lisa. And then we end up in the United States and like Lisa said, pastoring for over 10 years. And then, we had some supernatural events that really caused us to come back. So it was quite interesting.
And, Lisa gave us the ethnic flavor of the church. But
yeah.
I know you have, we're talking pre-pandemic here. We'll talk about the pandemic in a moment. But just talk about some of the various ministries that you have and how you've, what you've done and why you started them. Just give us an overview of the menu at Alive Church.
Sure. So because we didn't plant the church, we were coming in and trying to follow the vision that God had set in place for the church. So a foundation was laid, which was great. And then we started looking at prophetic words. One of those was to plant churches. And for several years, the church had looked really heavily at doing it. Like there was a huge file actually showing schematics of different locations, costs, and so forth. Like it was very in depth. And, after the first year and a half of us coming on, I looked at this file and I took the file and I put it on the desk and had the elders there. And I just said, did God speak this or not?
Mm-hmm.
And, so we went on a time of prayer and fasting. And, we really felt strongly that is what God has called Alive Church to do. So we ended up rebranding our names. It used to be called New Market Community Church, but it was very regional minded, right? You can't take that name to other regions. So we really felt like Alive really was a great reflection of what we are and who we want to be. And so after that, shortly after that, actually, we planted a church. We started in somebody's home. And we started with just a couple of couples, doing Bible studies and praying and so forth and reaching out. And then, in just a short matter of time, we outgrew the house and we ended up, renting a gymnasium. And so that was just the grace of God for us. It was just so awesome. And so a lot of the things that we were doing is we had to relook at as mm-hmm. God was bringing about change. He was giving us Joshua 1:9. He was telling us to go and to be courageous in that. And everywhere we were going to go, he was going to be with us. So that's what really made it easy for us to push out into deeper waters. Mm-hmm. And so we looked at a lot of things. We actually, one of the first things that we looked at was our children's ministry. And we really felt like God say, if the home life is not strong, then how can you go out? How can you demonstrate anything if our children, our number one draft picks, are not being looked after? So that was the first overhaul, was that we overhauled our children's ministry to teach and train up our children in the right ways. And it just kind of grew from there. And God brought in some good people. And, we created a discipleship path because we were just believing that God was going to continue to increase what was happening. And he has. Like, we're seeing people coming to know Jesus Christ regularly. We're seeing signs and wonders of healing and deliverance. And it's just, we're not that good. We just totally depend on him, and we're so grateful for all that he's doing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay, let me put you on hold. I'm going to bring Lisa back on. And Lisa, talk about now pandemic Canada. Talk about how the pandemic unfolded up north and how the government has responded and is responding, and how bad was it?
Yeah. The government has been wonderful. I think we're kind of in the same boat that a lot of other people. We wish things would be moving along much quicker. But the government here in Canada is moving very trepidatious. Now, we don't have the same population as what the United States would have, so our cases up here in Canada would be much of a different look. But still, we the the epidemic, when it did hit, it grew like wildfire. I think many people didn't realize how quickly it was going to hit when it did hit. But the government reacted very quickly, very swiftly, to shut things down immediately, put precautions into place very quickly. And we just actually received an announcement 2 days ago here in Canada that we are going to be in a state of emergency for another 30 days. So our reopening, we definitely don't have a Donald Trump figure, right or wrong, that's kind of pushing a reopening. Canada is, and Canada in general is a little bit more of a laid back, go with the flow kind of a country and people. And that's kind of reflective to kind of how we're reopening. They're taking things very slowly. They'll watch probably the other nations. And the big talk right now is waiting for a second wave. But, you know, to be honest, majority of people are doing well. But it's definitely the retirement centers and that age bracket that is being hit hard here in Canada, like the United States.
Yeah. So does that that means the church hasn't been able to meet? Is that correct?
Yes, that's very correct. So probably about 3 weeks ago, they put out an announcement that we could have parking lot church, but people would all have to stay in their vehicles, and nobody could go into the buildings to use washrooms, et cetera, et cetera. So basically what most churches are doing is just continuing to live stream, because the one option they gave us is not really doable.
I'm going to bring Phil back on live here. So you'll both be live the whole time. I'm not going to go back and forth. It's going to be a little cumbersome. So Phil, you know, what did you think? Your church has to shut down, it can't meet. What was this a big deal, not a big deal? Did you have things in place? What were your responses in the early days?
Yeah, we were a little bit behind the eight ball on this. We had been talking about for months how we wanted to do live streaming, and we had actually ordered the equipment. But when it came in was when everything got shut down. So it was just like one of those things like, oh, no, and now the person can't come in and hook it all up. So we had to get very creative with how we were going to stream and how we were going to go online using cell phones and computers and that sort of a thing, just doing the best we can with what we had. You know, there's many different forms of churches, you know, John, and I follow a lot of your social media and agree with a lot of the things that you're saying. And I think for me personally, I think it's an exciting time, as much as I miss everybody. Like, man, I miss everybody because I'm a very active pastor. I believe if you're a pastor, you should smell like sheep. And that's who I am. I love being with people. I love connecting. I love loving people. And that's what the word tells us. It says that when we do these things, it'll show that we're his disciples. So from that aspect, I've really, really missed everybody, but it's also been a great time to reset, in my opinion. And what I mean by that is, you know, I've had the privilege of going out for walks with some of our men. And I said, you know, what's good about this pandemic? And some of them have said, you know, it's funny, I'm not working the same hours that I was working, and I'm getting home and my attitude is better. So my wife actually loves me more. And my children, we're getting some good time with our children. So it led to another discussion about how do we guard our time, and how do we make sure that we're giving sufficient time to God and to our families on top of other things. What are we going to do to change so that we don't go back to the way that we were? We can keep moving forward.
Yeah. Yeah, if we'd had pandemic pastoring, I'd still be in the ministry. That would just, you know, just know people and could still preach and stuff. I'd still be the head of a church, but unfortunately the people do come. And it's funny, I had a pastor on yesterday, and he said the same thing you did, Phil, how much he missed the people and how they're opening up, what they're doing, a soft opening this weekend just to test things out, and then they're going to open next week, and he really can't wait. And that's why you're good pastors. But Lisa, what was your take? You know, the church, you know, it's meeting, that's the essence of who we are, and now we can't meet. What were your thoughts in the early days, and how have you seen it unfold in the ministry of the church over these 3 months?
Yeah, you know, like Philip, I'm a people person, so definitely miss the gathering of people. You know, the question that Philip and I get a lot is, because everyone is used to, at this point, live streaming, do you feel like when we go back to whatever normal is going to look like, do you think that people are going to want to come back to church, or are they just going to like continue live streaming? But, you know, I think it was actually one of your statements that you had made on your social media post, is that this epidemic has taught us what we can live without and what we can't live without.
Right.
And, you know, one of the things that Philip was talking about, one of the things that we can live without is busyness. Mm-hmm. But I think it's also taught us one of the things that we can't live without is one another. There's something
right.
about building relationship with each other and having that time of relationship. And I think it's creating more of a heart of gratitude in people
mm-hmm.
that we kind of lost because, you know, we always had the convenience of meeting together. And I think now when we're able to get together, I think people are going to be, at least myself, definitely more grateful for the ability to come together as a whole body. But
mm-hmm.
from the side of social media, John, I think it's like the live streaming, I think it is so awesome. You know, in my opinion, we probably have more mega churches today than ever before. But I think the church today has been less influential than ever before.
Mm-hmm.
And
no
I think
question.
Put this situation that's caused churches to be creative, more out of the box, has actually allowed many churches to come in tune and touch more with people than ever before.
Mm-hmm.
And I love the excitement of more churches live streaming, more churches jumping on social media, touching the millennials, and touching people that otherwise would have never come into a church building. I think they're saying that the average church in around the world has grown from 10 to 30%. And I just think that's because it's caused us to become more creative and
mm-hmm.
out of the box and actually influential by using social media.
Yeah, and it's, I think it's causing us, too, to redefine what is the church. You know, I mean, a lot of people get uptight. You know, you can't have any kind of church or any kind of relationships unless you're face-to-face. But this has been the next best thing to being there, and I think we have been alerted to the possibilities that are there that we didn't think really existed or we had poo-pooed
mm-hmm.
or, you know, just kind of, well, you know, we resented. And mostly my generation of leaders, you know, we resented social media. We still don't want to do it for the most part. We've seen so much in this time. I was talking to the pastor in England on the show the other day. She said, I'm doing all my premarital counseling by Zoom. She said, it's wonderful. She said, it's actually better than face-to-face. She said, I'm going to continue this after, you know, because people would have to get dressed up. They'd have to come to the church. Somebody would be late. They'd be stuck in traffic.
Yeah.
She'd forget about it. Suddenly, this is right in their home. She said, it's more intimate. It's more special. And she said, because they are locked down too still, she said, I'm in no hurry to get back to my normal routine of what it used to be because I'm still learning about new possibilities. Now, Lisa, let me stay with you. I think over the last year, has your ministry sort of changed within the church? Are you doing a little more teaching and preaching, or was that always happening? Am I mistaken?
Yeah, no, I have a lot more. You know, like Philip was talking, like different seasons in life, and we have a couple of young children, and there was definitely a season of being there with the kids and being mom and kind of helping take care of the home front. And as now the kids are getting older, it's really allowed me to kind of re-question, okay, you know, I can't use my kids as an excuse. You know, as any kind of an excuse or a crutch. Like, it took me back to a place of saying, God, in this next season, as my kids are getting older, what do you want me to be doing? You know, I was always more than happy being behind the scenes, but God, is that what you want me to be doing? Mm-hmm. And I really did feel called to start speaking more. And one thing that Philip and I both found that as I started speaking, whether it's Sunday morning over the pulpit or just doing some speaking on social media or whatever, it really started to draw in the women in the congregation. And I think a lot of women in particular love to also see a female speaking once in a while, and it pulls in that perspective of listeners. So it's been really a growing experience for myself, and it's, you know, it's at first it's even maybe a bit uncomfortable, but I really enjoy it at this point. And we've also found that a lot of women enjoy it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Phil, what during the pandemic, did you have themes that you were, did you continue the themes that you had planned for the year? Did you have special topics, or what was your approach to the pulpit during the pandemic?
Yeah. Obviously, when we first started out, we were addressing the situation, and actually, we were just coming back from the Carolinas. We were on vacation as this whole thing took place, so there was actually 2 weeks where we had no church before Lisa and I came back. So we really spoke about faith and trusting in God, and trying to bring comfort to people. And then we did enter back into our sermon series, trying to get back to some place. And for us right now, like, we're really talking about character in this season, and knowing God's voice and how to hear His voice. Because, like you're saying, you know, it's really important. When God is close, He whispers. He doesn't yell. Mm-hmm. And my personal belief in this time is that God has stripped away all these things, and He's really desiring an intimacy with us. So speaking out of that intimacy with God, and how to have that intimate relationship, how can we draw nearer in this time so that we can hear what He has? And I believe that what we put in is what's going to come out as we come out of this pandemic, that God is bottling up that time that we spend with Him. And there's going to be some form of outpouring, whatever that looks like. That's my personal belief. I really feel like this is an important time for us to retool and regroup with Him, so that we can be charged for. Obviously, we're charged now, and we're doing ministry in many ways. But I believe there's going to be many facets in the coming days of ministry, which you're. You know, John, you're a pioneer. You're doing so many different things, and that's inspiring us as well. So, right now we're on a sermon series entitled Not Today, Satan. And we thought it was interesting how the unfortunate events that had taken place in the United States, how that happened during our series, which has also helped us be able to talk about some of these issues. So.
Yeah. If you're just tuning in, we're talking to Philip and Lisa Wins, the pastors of Alive Church in Newmarket, suburb of Toronto, Canada. Guys, let's stay with that theme. Lisa, let me talk to you. You're an American. You live in Canada. Yeah. You've watched the events that have unfolded. Of course, you're familiar with our history of racism and some of the issues. You know, what are your thoughts when you watch it, you know, what, any perspective of living in Canada that could be of assistance to us back here as we work to establish change in the hearts of people and in the habits of our culture?
Yeah, I mean, very, very tragic, John. And you know, but you know, from a Christian's perspective, I one of your posts, John, actually said, "I have more in common with a person of color who is in Christ than I do with a white person not in Christ, because mm-hmm. our identity is defined by the kingdom and not genetics."
Mm-hmm.
And you know, that kind of almost says it all in a nutshell. That you know, thank you, Jesus, that you know, we attend a multicultural church that is very kingdom-minded,
mm-hmm.
and it's really our job just to keep our hearts soft and to keep kindness before us through periods like this.
Mm-hmm.
One thing that I found quite unusual as an American living in Canada, though, is America is known as a melting pot, and so, therefore, you know, you have a culture that is a melting pot culture. And when we use the word melting pot, I mean, back when it was created, the ideology is everyone needs to form to the American way. And if you're not in the American way, and what a lot of that meant was sometimes like a white Caucasian way,
mm-hmm.
then you're skewed on as an outsider. But here in Canada, the pride is not as being as a melting pot. One, the word that's used a lot in Canada is we are a multicultural country. And the celebration of cultural diversity. So the interesting thing is you can ask a Canadian, you could say, where are you from? Or what is your heritage? And most Canadians will say where their family line originated from, even if it was like five generations back. So, which I thought was very interesting, because they hold tight their different race, their different generational backgrounds, and they hold it high. And so, because of that, the acceptance of and the pride that Canadians have that we're multicultural has, in a sense, reduced racism here in Canada. And Philip can talk a little bit further about racism, because actually what Philip did is he contacted many people in our congregation that are of different race background and talked with them about racism and what they feel racism is like living in Canada. But in general, I would have to say that racism is much less here in Canada because of the pride of being multicultural.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Philip, go ahead. Philip, what can you add?
Can you hear John?
Yeah, you're fuzzing out a little bit. I think it's just a little bit of signal.
Okay.
I've had a little bit of echo, but yeah, I can hear you.
Okay. So like Lisa was saying, I just thought it would be a great exercise to talk to our multicultural families in a live church and just kind of ask them, you know, how do you feel about racism? Have you experienced racism? Do you think it's on the incline? Do you think it's on the decline? And, you know, thankfully, a lot of them had said, you know, they had not experienced any form of racism whatsoever. And then there's definitely some that said absolutely they had been discriminated against and so forth. So it's definitely real here. All of them recognize that it's far greater in the United States, and I think too, there's a completely different history between the United States and Canada
mm-hmm.
here. But I think if there's probably one greater culture that's discriminated against the most in Canada, it's probably Native American, and their health care is really bad, and it's very unsafe in some of these areas. It's the highest level of women being taken at young ages and thrown into the sex slave trade and so forth. So anyways, it was a great time to connect with our multicultural families who we love. Like, that's one of the things I absolutely love and adore about our church, is that we're so multicultural. We get the best food on the planet. And you know what? Cultures know how to love each other, and they know how to party. So I love going to the Dominican on mission and learning those types of things. So it's great.
Yeah. Yeah, it's of course, you know, the slavery is really the bedrock of so many of the issues that we have here, and it's been 4-century battle and you know, a civil war where 600,000 people lost their lives, and it still won't go away. It was always, as we studied the Underground Railroad, we saw how many slaves escaped to the north, but when they got to the north of the United States, they found still it was very oppressive. So they kept going to Canada, and so Canada represented something. And nobody, I had never read of anybody who was disappointed when they went there, that they did find an environment where they could live their lives and be treated as equals. And so earlier you mentioned, and we met through Derek Prince Ministries, and of course Derek Prince, you know, his ministry represents a lot of things, but you mentioned earlier miracles and deliverance were part of your values, part of your ministry expression in the church. Lisa, let me talk with you. What do you mean by deliverance and miracles? What are you seeing happening? And just walk our listeners through some understanding of that.
Sure. Well, one of the things that we teach our congregation, and one of the things that we talk about a lot, is we use phrases like the powers of darkness and phrases like that. But one thing that we talk about is, you know, it's not a something, it's a someone. And we're addressing Satan as a person who comes to kill, steal, and destroy. Mm-hmm. And one of the things that we talk about as well is, you know, Satan has these tactics, and he comes to deceive, he comes to accuse, he comes to tempt, and he comes to hinder the lives of people. So whether it's through accusations or generational curses or opening doors through satanic involvement, we find that there are a lot of Christians even that need generational curses broken off of them, or that need some area of the powers of darkness bound and kicked out of their own lives, so then they can walk this path of discipleship that Philip talked about. You know, going back to Derek Prince, one of the things that he said is, you know, we need to be people that kick the demons out of the people instead of the people out of the church. And that's a strong statement, that a lot of times people get saved but not set free. Mm-hmm. And yet they're battling a force that's stronger than their self-will. And they find discipleship and they find everything so difficult because they're battling powers inside of them that's strong and that's real. And so one of the first things that we do when we lead people to Christ is we help break generational curses off of them and begin the process of whatever that means, shutting any kind of satanic doors that they had opened through fortune tellers or anything that they have dabbled into in the area of witchcraft, to shut them so they have a fair chance to walk out a victorious Christian life.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Phil, what can you add? What do you see as the role of deliverance and the miraculous and the ministry of Derek Prince? You know, how have you strategically tried to apply those truths in the life of a live church?
Yeah, I just did an exercise in reading the Gospels and highlighting, underlining all the times that Jesus either prayed for the sick or cast demons out, and quite often they happen simultaneously. When people are set free, actually people are getting healed as well. And you know, I was kind of in awe of all of this, and I just remember praying and asking God for help, because I really didn't know how to do deliverance. And I, you know, of course I've read Derek Prince and, you know, I've had great godly people in my life, but me personally, I didn't really know how to do that. And so what happens is I start praying and asking God for help in this area because we're supposed to imitate what he does, right? And mm-hmm. and if over a third of his ministry was spent doing this, I looked at it as a highly important thing. And when you read about Philip in the Bible, it actually says that when he began to flow in signs and wonders, the people began to listen to him.
Right, right. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so that was a huge thing. So we started implementing that. And I really believe that since we started doing those things and just taking a shot at it, I mean, that's what it comes down to. It's all about faith and believing in God and believing the authority that you have in God. And I think one of the most powerful lines in one of Derek's books, They Shall Expel Demons, he was talking about how he started in the deliverance ministry. And there was Bible teachers, there were people that were actually coming against him and really discouraging him. And he almost gave up, like he really felt like, I'm going to give up here. And then the line that really captured me is, he said, but the need outweighed criticism.
Mm-hmm.
And so that caused him to push on in this area. And so, you know, I contacted Derek Prince Ministries over something that had happened in our church personally, and so they were able to help us in this area. We have a prayer coach there named Juanita, and she kind of, you know, helped, and then we just started grabbing every Derek Prince book and every book on deliverance that we could find, and just started spending time with God, and God has just catapulted this ministry. And now we have people from all over that are coming because they know they need to be set free, and they have been a million places and couldn't get set free because it feels like it's like a lost ministry in the world today.
Yeah. Yeah, and part of my concern is, as I'm making a distinction between cultural racism, where laws and training and sensitivity and all those things are very important and very relevant, but we're also facing spiritual racism, which is a stronghold, and it has a stronghold on people's minds because it's a thought process. And so the church is the only one that can address it from a spiritual perspective. And mm-hmm. my concern has been that as we get more and more involved politically, and every citizen has a right to do that, it can trick us into thinking we are making some progress that we are not making. And you know, I've began to frame the whole issue of racism in the context of power. It's an abuse of power, and power is the most intoxicating force in the universe. I posted the other day, we've seen people repent of sexual sin. We've seen people make restitution for financial missteps. But I've never in the 50 years almost that I've walked with the Lord ever heard anybody repent for abuse of power. And
yeah.
to me, that's what it is, and it's so pervasive. I mean, it's white against black, it's male against female, it's female against fetus, it's tribe against tribe, and I think the enemy has done a great job of covering his tracks so that we wouldn't come after the right thing. I mean, we go after the leaves and we can't seem to get to the root. Let me just ask you guys, I'm using you as a sounding board, so Lisa, I'll start with you. Does that make any sense at all in the context of deliverance and the things you said about the enemy of our soul?
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. I mean, you know, Satan's greatest desire is power. His greatest desire is to be worshipped,
mm-hmm.
and which is pretty much what caused his fall, the I wills, right? And if Satan can have that kind of a foothold in any of our, any area in our life, that just opens up the door for demonic power and activity.
Yeah, and then when you have a collective, that you have a cultural stronghold, and it's just remarkable to me that even in light of things that are happening, you have white athletes and others who are still tweeting ridiculous things. I mean, insensitive things, racist things, and so and people shake their heads and say, "How can this happen?" Part of it is cultural, but part of it is spiritual as well. And Phil, you mentioned earlier, you used the phrase the kingdom of God. It is, you know, there's a difference between church and the kingdom, and what you're building up there is a church, but you're doing it on kingdom principles, and I think that is so important. But Phil, let me ask you, what I was saying about power and racism, does it make any sense at all? Is there a flaw in it? And, you know, how does it fit into the very concept of deliverance and being set free from evil that you're talking about?
Yeah, I mean, kind of like what Lisa said, that evil is a someone, not a something.
Mm-hmm.
And when I look at this whole scenario, like I was actually kind of blown away. I was really thankful that so many people participated in our survey. Like, we really have some of the best people on the planet. And but it was also interesting to learn just how affected people were. And, you know, there's actually, I think, an underlying spiritual element, because here's oppression. Like, that's one of Satan's goals, is to oppress people.
Yep.
Oppress people groups, and that's what's happening. And I really believe strongly that we had two major manifestations, in my opinion, of the powers of darkness. Because when you look at the coronavirus, it brought a lot of fear. Like, I mean, I went to the store and I saw people paralyzed by fear. They were,
right.
You know, they're watching you, they're watching everything, they're ready to, you know, freak out. And that's Satan, right? Satan, he comes sometimes as a dragon in Revelation 12, and sometimes he comes as a serpent, and a dragon is scary. You know, you see movies with the dragon blowing fire and people are running for their lives. Sometimes he comes like that. Sometimes he comes like a snake, you know, like in India. They have cobras, and thousands of people die every year from cobra bites. You know, they'll come up a bathroom pipe, or they'll crawl through a tiny hole in, you know, in a wall, and they'll be in the room, and you don't even know they're there. And so I believe that there's, you know, there's the coronavirus that brought, like, this dragon-ish fear upon the earth, and then now you have this very tragic event that I personally believe was, you know, something that people didn't expect to happen, and now you have social media exposing, thank God, this injustice. And you know, so that's how Satan comes. So he's looking to cause fear. He's looking to cause oppression. And he's a murderer. He wants to murder people. He wants to take them out because he's concerned that the kingdom of God, people in the kingdom, are going to drive him back, are going to drive his schemes and his plans and his strategies so that he can't fulfill his playbook.
Yeah, very true. And we've got about 5 minutes. So, Lisa, let me go back to you. You know, you got another 30 days or thereabouts before the church can even think about reopening again. And I know, you know, that we're still processing so many things that are happening. But just, are there any things you're clear on in just 2 minutes of changes that you'd like to see personally, things you're going to do differently, or things you think the church needs to do differently when things reopen again?
Yeah, definitely, John. I mean, I think through every opportunity of change, we need to grow from that, and I think we really have it as a church. Like Philip said, we were behind the eight ball a little bit with some of the live streaming, and our heart was there, but we just didn't kick things into motion. And now that we have, and we've reached so much of a broader audience, we're definitely part of our new normal as a church, and we've talked as a leadership team, is definitely staying in there, even when we go back to services, with the different live streamings and the different outlets that we're using through social media. And, you know, you're talking about the one pastor in England with Zoom, and we found the same thing. We found that, you know, before we were trying to offer classes, particularly for parents and parenting classes,
mm-hmm.
but the people that need to attend parenting classes have young kids.
Yeah.
And a lot of them couldn't come because they couldn't afford babysitters.
Mm-hmm.
They didn't have a network where they actually could attend the class. So the people that needed to be at the class were the ones that couldn't be there. So we're looking at moving forward classes for parents. We're going to start doing through Zoom and Skype and different things like that. So these parents can put the kids to bed, pull open their laptop, and
mm-hmm.
sit together as a husband and wife and do parenting classes and marriage classes and not have to pay for babysitters to come into the church building.
Amen.
I mean, it's definitely opened our eyes and caused us to be much more creative, but I think that creativity is going to be a double bonus moving forward.
Yeah,
and so we don't want to lose momentum.
Yeah, right. Phil, a couple of minutes, anything?
Yeah, no, I agree. I mean, one of the things you were talking about, John, when you did a study on, diseases and things that were, you know, in the Bible, plagues,
mm-hmm.
I think what it does is it causes people to have to change, they have to move, they have to do something. Otherwise, you know what, you can say I'm not in a battle, I'm, you know, all you want, but there's a battle upon you, there's a war upon you, and if you don't move, it doesn't take much to bypass a parked car. And
yeah.
So in this time, I really believe that God, he has allowed us to reset and refocus. And it's caused us to catapult into creativity and allow people to watch that couldn't watch before. So
yeah.
I'm very encouraged by this, and I'm very thankful for this time personally. And I'm really excited about the future and what God's going to do through it.
Yeah, I think my concern, not for you, is, but, you know, people in rushing back to reopen, they will forget the lessons. That, and I think, you know, I'm recommending, you know, in any way I can that there be an online pastor, you know, somebody who is the point person for making sure that these lessons are not lost. And they don't have weekend duties, they just have online duties. So they're always looking to see how they can take every church and make that church have a window into it so people any place in the world can look into it. When my kids were born years ago, you used to go to the nursery and they'd be behind glass and the nurses would be working and you could pick up a phone, the nurse would pick it up and you'd say Stanko and she'd go over and find the little Stanko baby and hold the baby up for everybody to see and then they'd go about their business. And I feel like that's an image of how we need to do the church. We don't need to stop what we're doing. But we need to, we don't need to make that the total focus, but there are sometimes we do need to stop what we're doing and show people what it is who are interested. And that may be somebody in India, that may be somebody yep. across the street, and I think we need to treat them the same. Anyway, guys, our time is gone. God bless you up there in Newmarket in a live church, and Catherine sends her love, and we look forward to being together as soon as possible when all this settles down.
Yeah, please tell Catherine hello from us. We miss her dearly as well, and thank you so much for this time, John. We really appreciate you you allowing
good
us
to hear
to come
from
on
you.
It's
a good report. Thank you, Phil. Lisa, you
thanks,
take care,
John.
Too.
Thank you.
All righty. God bless. Mm-hmm.
Blessing.
All right, there we had Philip and Lisa Wins, pastors of Alive Church, Newmarket suburb of Toronto. And as I said, next week, Tuesday, Dr. Rhonda is going to interview me. Monday, my friend, Dr. Sheila Hunt, will be on, and I've got others lined up for the week. So this is John Stanko signing off. Don't forget to download the ministry app, Purpose Quest International. It'll help us stay in touch until we're together again. Have a great weekend or a great day whenever you're listening to this. So long for now.
Thanks again for listening to Wake Up to Purpose with John Stanko. To get in touch with John, you can go to www.purposequest.com or write him at johnstanko@gmail.com.